following her lead. Daddy pours himself a glass of water, wiping sweat from his brow.
"Do you really need to bring that treadmill?"
he asks Trina.
"It doesn't even work properly."
"It works fine." Gulping the rest of his water, he says,
"I've never seen you use it."
She frowns at him. "That doesn't mean I don't use it. It means I don't use it in front of you."
"All right, when's the last time you used it?"
Her eyes narrow.
"None of your business."
"Trina!"
"Dan!"
This is a new side to Daddy. Bickering, losing his patience, just barely. Trina brings it out of him. And I know it sounds strange, but I'm glad for it. It's something I never realized was gone in him. There's making do, living a pleasant life, no big ups or downs. And there's all the friction and fire that come with being in love with someone. She takes forever to get ready, which drives him crazy. And she makes fun of his hobbies, like bird watching and documentaries. But they just fit. Chapter 19. There's a lacrosse game tonight, and Pammy can't go because she has to work. And of course, Chris would never deign to go to a lacrosse game, so I bring Kitty with me. She pretends to mull it over, musing aloud that it might be boring, but when I say, "Never mind then," she quickly agrees to come. In the stands, we run into Peter's mom and his younger brother Owen, so we sit with them. He and Kitty proceed to each pretend the other doesn't exist. He plays games on his phone, and she plays games on hers. Owen is tall, but he sits hunched, with his hair in his eyes. We chat about my dad and Trina's engagement for a bit, and I tell her some of my ideas for the wedding. She's nodding along, and then she suddenly says,
"I hear congratulations are in order for you, too."
Confused, I say, "What for?"
"William and Mary."
"Oh, thank you."
"I know you were hoping to go to UVA, but this might be for the best anyway."
She gives me a sympathetic smile. I smile back, unsure. Unsure of what exactly "for the best" means. Is she glad I'm not going to UVA with Peter? Does she think this means we're breaking up now? So all I say is, "Williamsburg isn't really that far from Charlottesville anyway." Her response is,
"Yes, that's true."
Then Peter scores a point, and we both stand up and cheer. When I sit back down again, Kitty asks me, "Can we get popcorn?" "Sure," I say, glad to have an excuse to get up. To Peter's mom and brother, I ask, "Do you guys want anything?" Without looking up, Owen says,
"Popcorn." "You guys can share," Peter's mom says.
I make my way down the bleachers, and I'm heading for the snack bar when I notice a man standing off to the side, his arms crossed, watching the game. He's tall, he has nut-brown hair, handsome. When he turns his head and I see his profile, I know who he is, because I know that face. I know that chin, those eyes. He's Peter's dad. It's like seeing the ghost of Christmas future, and I'm frozen in place, transfixed. He catches me staring at him and offers a friendly smile. I feel like I have no choice but to take a step forward and ask, "Excuse me, but are you Peter's dad?" Surprised, he nods.
"Are you a friend of his?"
"I'm Lara Jean Covey, his, girlfriend." He looks startled, but then he recovers and extends his hand. I shake it firmly to give a good impression. "Wow, you look just like him." He laughs, and I'm struck anew by how much of him is in Peter.
"He looks just like me, you mean?"
I laugh too. "Right. You were here first." There's an awkward silence, and then he clears his throat and asks me,
"How is he?"
"Oh, he's good. He's great. Did you hear he's going to UVA on a lacrosse scholarship?" He nods, smiling.
"I heard that from his mom. I'm proud of him. Not that I can take credit for it, but still, I'm really proud of the kid."
His eyes flicker back to the field, to Peter.
"I just wanted to see him play again. I've missed it."
He hesitates before saying,
"Please don't mention to Peter that I was here."
I'm so taken by surprise, all I can say is, "Oh, okay."
"Thank you. I appreciate it. It was nice to meet you, Largie."
"It was nice to meet you too, Mr. Kavinsky." With that, I go back to the bleachers, and only when I'm halfway up there do I remember I forgot the popcorn, so I have to go back down. When I get back to the snack bar, Peter's dad is gone. Our team ends up losing, but Peter scores 3 points, and it's a good game for him. I'm glad his dad got to see him play. But I really wish I didn't agree to keeping it a secret from Peter. The thought makes my stomach hurt. In the car, I'm still thinking about his dad. But then Kitty says, "That was weird what Peter's mom said about it being a good thing you weren't going to UVA." "I know, right? You took it that way too." "There really wasn't any other way to take it," Kitty says. I check my side view mirrors before turning left out of the school parking lot. I don't think she meant it in a mean way exactly. She just doesn't want to see Peter get hurt, that's all. And neither do I. So maybe it's for the best that I don't say anything to Peter about seeing his dad tonight. What if he gets excited about his dad coming, and then his dad hurts him again? Abruptly, I say, "Do you want to stop and get frozen yogurts?" And of course, Kitty says, "Yes." Peter comes to the house after he showers up, and as soon as I see how happy he is, my mind is made up not to say anything. We're lying on the living room floor doing face sheet masks. If the kids at school could see him now, through gritted teeth he asks, "What's this one supposed to do?" "Brighten dull skin." He twists toward me and croaks,
"Hello, Clarice."
"What are you talking about?"
"It's from Silence of the Lambs."
"Oh, I never saw that. It looked too scary." Peter sits upright. He's terrible at sitting still.
"We have to watch it right now. This is ridiculous. I can't be with someone who's never seen Silence of the Lambs."
I'm pretty sure it's my turn to pick.
"Covey, come on. It's a classic,"
Peter says, just as his phone buzzes. He answers it, and I hear his mom's voice on the other line.
"Hey, Mom. I'm at Lara Jean's. I'll be home soon."
"I love you, too."
When he gets off the phone, I say, "Hey, I forgot to tell you this earlier, but at the game tonight, your mom said that maybe it was for the best that I didn't get into UVA."
"What?"
He sits up and pulls off his face mask. Well, she didn't say it exactly like that, but I think that's how she meant it.
What were her exact words?
I peel off my mask, too. She congratulated me on getting into William and Mary, and then I think she said, "I know you were hoping to go to UVA, but this might be for the best anyway." Peter relaxes.
"Oh, she always talks like that. She looks for the bright side in things. She's like you."
It didn't seem that way to me, but I don't push it, because Peter's very protective of his mom. I guess he's had to be, since it's just the three of them. But what if it didn't have to be? What if Peter has a real chance of having a relationship with his dad? What if tonight is proof? Casually, I ask him, "Hey, how many graduation announcements did you sign up for?"
10. My family's small." "Why?"
"Just wondering. I signed up for 50, so my grandma could send some to family in Korea." I hesitate before asking, "Do you think you'll send your dad one?" He frowns.
"No. Why would I?"
He picks up his phone.
"Let's see what movies we have left. If Silence of the Lambs is off the table, we could watch Trainspotting or Die Hard."
I don't say anything for a moment. Then I snatch his phone out of his hands. It's my turn to pick, and I pick Amelie. For someone who once put up such a fuss about not watching rom-coms or foreign films, Peter sure loves Amelie. It's about a French girl who's afraid to live in the world, so she concocts these whimsical fantasies in her head, with lamps that talk and paintings that move and crepes that look like records. It makes me want to live in Paris.
I wonder what you'd look like with bangs.
Peter muses.
Cute, I bet.
At the end of the movie, when she bakes a plum cake, he turns to me and says,
Do you know how to bake a plum cake? That sounds delicious.
You know, mini plum cakes could be good for the dessert table. I start researching recipes on my phone.
Just make sure you call me when you do your trial run,
Peter says, yawning. Chapter 20. Trina and I are on the couch drinking tea. I'm showing her pictures of floral arrangements when Daddy walks through the front door and collapses on the couch with us.
Long day? Trina asks him.
The longest,
he says, closing his eyes.
Question, I say.
His eyes flutter open.
Yes, my middleborn.
What are you guys thinking for the first dance?
He groans.
I'm too tired to think about dancing right now.
Please, it's your wedding. Be present, Daddy.
Trina laughs and pokes him in the side with her foot.
Be present, Dan. Okay. Well, Trina's a big Shania Twain fan.
They grin at each other.
So, what about from this moment on?
Aw, she says, you really do know me.
Shania Twain? I repeat. Doesn't she sing that song, Man, I Feel Like a Woman? Trina holds her mug like it's a microphone and tilts her head.
From this moment, I will love you,
she sings off-key. I don't think I know that song, I say, trying to sound neutral. Play it for her on your phone, she says to Daddy.
Don't judge,
he warns me, and then he plays it.
It's the most un-him song I've ever heard, but he's got a goofy smile on his face the entire time, and it only gets bigger when Trina puts her arm around his shoulder and makes him sway with her to the beat.
It's perfect, I say, and suddenly I feel like crying. I clear my throat. So, now that the song is picked out, we can start ticking other stuff off the list. I've been going back and forth with Tilly's Treats about doing mini banana puddings in little canning jars, and they say they can't do them for less than $7 a piece.
Worry lines cross Daddy's forehead.
That seems pricey, no?
Don't worry, I've got a call in to a bakery in Richmond, and if the delivery price isn't too bad, that might be the way to go. I flip through my binder. I've been so busy with desserts, I haven't had a chance to go meet with the band I've been in touch with. They're playing in Keswick this weekend, so I might try and go see them play. Daddy looks at me with concern in his eyes.
Honey, it seems like maybe you've replaced baking with wedding planning as your stress relief. This is all a little much.
The band isn't exactly a band, I quickly say. It's a singer and a guy with a guitar. They're just starting out, so it's all very reasonable. I'll know more when I see them in person.
Don't they have videos you can watch?
Trina asks. Sure, but it's not the same as seeing them live.
I don't think we need a band, Daddy says, exchanging a look with Trina. I think we'd be fine with just playing music off the computer.
That's fine, but we'd need to rent sound equipment. I start flipping through my binder, and Trina reaches out and puts her hand on my arm.
Sweetie, I love that you want to help us with this, and I'm so grateful. But honestly, I'd rather you didn't stress yourself out. Your dad and I don't really care about any of the details. We just want to get married. We don't need a food truck or mini banana puddings. We'd truly be just as happy ordering a bunch of barbecue from BBQ Exchange.
I start to speak, and she stops me.
You only get one senior year of high school, and I want you to enjoy it.
You have a hot boyfriend, and you got into a great school. Your birthday's coming up soon. This is the time to just be young and celebrate and enjoy each other.
Yes, within reason, of course, Daddy says hastily.
But guys, I'm not stressed out, I protest. Focusing on the wedding gives me a sense of peace. It's very calming for me.
And you've been a big help, but I think there are other things you could be focusing on that are more worthy of your time, like finishing out your senior year and preparing for college. Daddy has that firm, immovable look on his face, the one I see so seldom.
I frown. So you don't want me to help out with the wedding anymore?
Trina says, I still want you to be in charge of the bridesmaid dresses, and I'd love for you to bake our wedding cake.
And the groom's cake? I interrupt.
Sure. But the rest of it, we'll take care of. I swear, I'm only saying this to you for your own good, Lara Jean. No more haggling over prices with vendors. No more impromptu road trips to Richmond for cake tables, Daddy adds.
I sigh, a reluctant kind of sigh. If you're sure...
She nods.
Just go be young. Focus on your prom dress. Have you started looking yet?
Sort of.
It's hitting me now that we are less than a month away from prom, and I still don't have a dress.
If you're really sure... We're sure, Daddy says, and Trina nods.
As I head up the stairs, I hear Daddy whisper to her,
Why in the world are you encouraging her to go enjoy her hot boyfriend?
I almost laugh out loud.
That's not what I meant, Trina says.
He makes a harumph sound.
It sure sounded like it.
Oh my God, don't take everything so literally, Dan.
Besides, her boyfriend is hot.
I look at prom dresses on my computer, and I laugh out loud every time I think about Daddy calling Peter my hot boyfriend. An hour into searching, I'm fairly certain I found my dress. It's ballerina style, with a metallic lattice bodice and a tulle skirt. The website calls the color dusty pink. Stormy will be pleased. With that done, I go on the William & Mary website and pay the enrollment deposit, like I should have done weeks ago. Later that week, on the ride to school, Peter says he got out of doing a delivery for his mom, and he can go with me to see the band play in Keswick. Glumly, I say, It turns out Daddy and Trina don't want a band after all. Or much of anything, for that matter. They want this wedding to be very low maintenance. They're just going to borrow some speakers and play music off a computer. Guess what song they picked for their first dance?
What song?
From This Moment On by Shania Twain. He frowns.
I never heard of that before.
It's really cheesy, but they love it apparently. Do you realize that we don't have a song? Like a song that's ours?
Okay, then let's pick one.
It doesn't work like that. You don't just pick your song. The song picks you, like the Sorting Hat.
Peter nods sagely. He finally finished reading all 7 Harry Potter books, and he's always eager to prove that he gets my references.
Got it.
It has to just happen. A moment. And the song transcends the moment, you know? My Mom and Dad's song was Wonderful Tonight by Eric Clapton. They danced to it at their wedding.
So, how did it become their song, then?
It was the first song they ever slow danced to in college. It was at a dance, not long after they started dating. I've seen pictures from that night. Daddy's wearing a suit that was too big on him, and my mom's hair is in a French twist.
How about whatever song comes on next? That's our song. It'll be fate.
We can't just make our own fate.
Sure we can.
Peter reaches over to turn on the radio. Wait! Just any radio station? What if it's not a slow song?
Okay, so we'll put on light 101.
Peter hits the button.
Winnie the Pooh doesn't know what to do. Got a honey jar stuck on his nose.
A woman croons.
Peter says, what the hell?
As I say, this can't be our song.
Best out of three, he suggests.
Let's not force it. We'll know it when we hear it, I think.
Maybe we'll hear it at the prom, Peter offers.
Oh, that reminds me. What color is your dress? My mom's going to ask her florist friend to make your corsage.
It's dusty pink. It came in the mail yesterday, and when I tried it on for everybody, Trina said it was the most Lara Jean dress she'd ever seen. I texted a picture to Stormy, who wrote back, ooh la la, with a dancing woman emoji.
What the heck is dusty pink?
Peter wants to know.
It's like a rose gold color.
Peter still looks confused, so I sigh and say, just tell your mom, she'll know.
And do you think you could bring a little corsage for Kitty, too, and act like it was your idea?
Sure, but I could have had that idea on my own, you know.
He grumbles.
You should at least give me a chance to have ideas.
I pat him on the knee. Just please don't forget. Chapter 21. It's late. I'm in my bed looking through my welcome packet from William and Mary. It turns out William and Mary doesn't allow freshmen to have cars on campus, and I'm about to call Peter to tell him when I get a text from John Ambrose McLaren. When I first see his name on my phone, I feel a jolt of surprise because it's been so long since we last talked. Then I read the text. Stormy died in her sleep last night. The funeral is in Rhode Island on Wednesday. I just thought you'd want to know. I just sit there for a moment, stunned. How can this be? When I last saw her, she was fine. She was great. She was Stormy. She can't be gone. Not my Stormy. Stormy, who was larger than life, who taught me how to apply red lipstick, so it lasts even after a night of kisses and champagne, she said. I start to cry and I can't stop. I can't get air in my lungs. I can barely see for crying. My tears keep falling on my phone and I keep wiping it with the back of my hand. What do I say to John? She was his grandmother and he was her favorite grandson. They were very close. First, I type, I'm so sorry, is there anything I can do? Then I delete it, because what could I possibly do to help? I'm so sorry. She had the most spirit of anyone I ever met. I'll miss her dearly.
Thank you. I know she loved you, too.
His text brings fresh tears to my eyes. Stormy was always saying that she still felt like she was in her 20s, that sometimes she'd dream she was a girl again, and she'd see her ex-husbands, and they'd be old, but she'd still be Stormy. She said when she woke up in the morning, she'd be surprised to be in her old body with her old bones.
I've still got the gams, though, she said, and she did.
It's almost a relief that the funeral is in Rhode Island, too far away for me to go. I haven't been to a funeral since my mom died. I was 9, Margot was 11, Kitty just 2. The clearest memory I have of that day is sitting beside my dad, Kitty in his arms, feeling his body shake next to mine as he cried silently. Kitty's cheeks were wet with his tears. She didn't understand anything except that he was sad. She kept saying, "Don't cry, Daddy." And he would try to smile for her, but his smile looked like it was melting. I'd never felt that way before, like nothing was safe anymore, or would be ever again. And now I'm crying again, for Stormy, for my mom, for everything. She wanted me to transcribe her memoirs for her. Stormy Weather, she wanted to call it. We never did get around to doing that. How will people know her story now? Peter calls, but I'm too sad to talk, so I just let it go to voicemail. I feel like I should call John, but I don't really have the right. Stormy was his grandma, and I was just a girl who volunteered at her nursing home. The one person I want to talk to is my sister, because she knew Stormy too, and because she always makes me feel better. But it's the middle of the night in Scotland. I call Margot the next day as soon as I wake up. I cry again as I tell her the news, and she cries with me. It's Margot who has the idea to have a memorial service for her at Bellevue. You could say a few words, serve some cookies, and people could share memories of her. I'm sure her friends would like that, since they won't be able to make it to the funeral. I blow my nose. I'm sure Stormy would like it, too. I wish I could be there for it. I wish so, too, I say, and my voice quivers. I always feel stronger with Margot beside me. Peter will be there, though, she says. Before I leave for school, I call my old boss, Jeanette, over at Bellevue, and tell her the idea about the memorial service. She agrees right away, and says we could have it this Thursday afternoon before bingo. When I get to school and tell Peter about Stormy's memorial service, his face falls. Shit, I have to go to that Days on the Lawn thing with my mom. Days on the Lawn is an open house for incoming first years at UVA. You go with your parents, you sit in on classes, tour the dorms. It's a big deal. I was really looking forward to it when I thought I might be going. He offers, I could skip it, though. You can't. Your mom would kill you. You have to go. I don't mind, he says, and I believe him. It's really okay. You didn't know, Stormy. I know. I just want to be there for you. The offer is what counts, I tell him. Instead of wearing black, I choose a sundress that Stormy once said she liked me in. It's white with cornflower blue forget-me-nots embroidered on the skirt, short puffy sleeves that go a little off the shoulder, and a nipped-in waist. Because I bought it at the end of summer, I've only had the chance to wear it once. I stopped by Bellevue on my way to meet Peter at the movies, and Stormy said I looked like a girl in an Italian movie. So I wear that dress and the white sandals I bought for graduation, and a little pair of lacy white gloves that I just know she'd appreciate. I found them at a vintage store in Richmond called Bygones, and when I put them on, I can almost imagine Stormy wearing them at one of her cotillions or Saturday night dances. I don't wear her pink diamond ring. I want the first time I wear it to be at my prom, the way Stormy would have wanted. I bring out the punch bowl, a crystal bowl of peanuts, a stack of cocktail napkins embroidered with cherries that I found at an estate sale, the tablecloth we use for Thanksgiving. I put a few roses on the piano, where Stormy used to sit. I make a punch with ginger ale and frozen fruit juice. No alcohol, which I know Stormy would have balked at, but not all of the residents can have it because of their medications. I do put out a bottle of champagne next to the punch bowl for anyone who wants to top off their punch with a little something extra. Lastly, I turn on Frank Sinatra, who Stormy always said should have been her second husband, if only. John said he'd come if he made it back from Rhode Island in time, and I'm feeling a little nervous for that because I haven't seen him since almost exactly a year ago on my birthday. We were never a thing, not really, but we almost were, and to me, that's something. A few people file in. One of the nurses wheels in Mrs. Armbruster, who has fallen to dementia but used to be pretty friendly with Stormy. Mr. Pirelli, Alicia, Shanice the receptionist, Jeanette. It's a good little group. The truth is, there are fewer and fewer people that I know at Bellevue. Some of them have moved in with their children, a few have passed away. Not as many familiar faces in the staff, either. The place changed while I wasn't looking. I'm standing at the front of the room, and my heart is pounding out of my chest. I'm so nervous to make my speech. I'm afraid of stumbling over my words and not doing her justice. I want to do a good job on it. I want to make Stormy proud. Everyone's looking at me with expectant eyes, except for Mrs. Armbruster, who's knitting and staring off into space. My knees shake under my skirt. I take a deep breath, and I'm about to speak when John Ambrose McLaren walks in, wearing a pressed button-down shirt and khakis. He takes a seat on the couch next to Alicia. I give him a wave, and in return, John gives me an encouraging smile. I take a deep breath. The year was 1952. I clear my throat and look down at my paper. It was summer, and Frank Sinatra was on the radio. Lana Turner and Ava Gardner were the starlets of the day. Stormy was 18. She was in the marching band. She was voted best legs, and she always had a date on Saturday night. On this particular night, she was on a date with a boy named Walt. On a dare, she went skinny dipping in the town lake. Stormy never could turn down a dare. Mr. Pirelli laughs and says, "That's right, she never could." Other people murmur in agreement, "She never could." A farmer called the police, and when they shined their lights on the lake, Stormy told them to turn around before she would come out. She got a ride home in a police car that night. "Not the first time or the last," someone calls out, and everyone laughs, and I can feel my shoulders start to relax. Stormy lived more life in one night than most people do their whole lives. She was a force of nature. She taught me that love... My eyes well up and I start over. Stormy taught me that love is about making brave choices every day. That's what Stormy did. She always picked love. She always picked adventure. To her, they were one and the same. And now she's off on a new adventure, and we wish her well. From his seat on the couch, John wipes his eyes with his sleeve. I give Janet a nod, and she gets up and presses play on the stereo, and Stormy weather fills the room. Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. After, John shoulders his way over to me, holding two plastic cups of fruit punch. Ruefully, he says, "I'm sure she'd tell us to spike it, but..." He hands me a cup and we clink. To Edith Sinclair McLaren Sheehan, better known as Stormy. Stormy's real name was Edith? It's so serious. Sounds like someone who wears wool skirts and heavy stockings and drinks chamomile tea at night. Stormy drank cocktails. John laughs. I know, right? So then where did the name Stormy come from? Why not Edie? Who knows? John says, a wry smile on his lips. She'd have loved your speech. He gives me a warm, appreciative sort of look. You're such a nice girl, Lara Jean. I'm embarrassed. I don't know what to say. Even though we never dated, seeing John again is what I imagine seeing an old boyfriend feels like. A wistful sort of feeling. Familiar, but just a little bit awkward, because there's so much left unsaid between us. Then he says, Stormy kept asking me to bring my girlfriend to visit her, and I never got around to it. I feel bad about that now. As casually as I can, I say, Oh, are you dating someone? He hesitates for just a split second and then nods. Her name is Dipti. We met at a Model UN convention at UVA. She beat me out for the gavel for our committee. Wow, I say. Yeah. She's awesome. We both start to speak at the same time. Do you know where you're going to school? Have you decided? We laugh, and a sort of understanding passes between us.
He says, I haven't decided. It's between College Park and William and Mary. College Park has a good business school, and it's really close to D.C. William and Mary's ranked higher, but Williamsburg is in the boonies, so I don't know yet. My dad's bummed because he really wanted me to go to UNC, but I didn't get in. I'm sorry. I decide not to mention that I got waitlisted at UNC. John shrugs. I might try and transfer there sophomore year. We'll see. What about you? Are you going to UVA? I didn't get in, I confess. Oh, man. I hear they were insanely selective this year. My school's salutatorian didn't get in, and her application was killer. I'm sure yours was, too. Shyly, I say, thanks, John. So where are you going to go if not UVA? William and Mary. His face breaks into a smile. Seriously? That's awesome. Where's Kavinsky going? UVA. He nods. For lacrosse, right? What about Dipti? I say it like I don't remember her name, even though I do. I mean, I just heard him say it not 2 minutes ago. Where's she going? She got in early to Michigan. Wow, that's so far. A whole lot farther than UVA and William and Mary, that's for sure. So are you guys going to stay together? That's the plan, John says. We're going to at least give the long-distance thing a try. What about you and Peter? That's our plan, too, for the first year. I'm going to try to transfer to UVA for the second year. John clinks his cup against mine. Good luck, Lara Jean. You too, John Ambrose McLaren. If I end up going to William and Mary, I'm going to call you. You better, I say. I stay at Bellevue a lot longer than I expected. Someone brings out their old records, and then people start dancing, and Mr. Pirelli insists on teaching me how to rumba, in spite of his bad hip. When Jeanette puts on Glenn Miller's song, In the Mood, my eyes meet John's, and we share a secret smile, both of us remembering the USO party. It was like something out of a movie. It feels like a long time ago now. It's strange to feel happy at a memorial for someone you loved, but that's how I feel. I'm happy that the day has gone well, that we've sent Stormy off in style. It feels good to say a proper goodbye, to have the chance. When I get back from Bellevue, Peter's sitting on my front steps with a Starbucks cup. Is nobody home? I ask, hurrying up the walk. Did you have to wait long?
Nah.
Still sitting, he reaches out his arms and pulls me in for a hug around my waist.
Come sit and talk to me for a minute before we go inside, he says, burying his face in my stomach.
I sit down next to him. He asks,
how was Stormy's memorial? How'd your speech go?
Good, but first tell me about days on the lawn. I grab his Starbucks cup out of his hands and take a sip of coffee, which is cold.
I sat in on a class, met some people. Not that exciting.
Then he takes my right hand in his, traces his finger over the lace of my gloves.
These are cool.
There's something bothering him, something he isn't saying. What's wrong? Did something happen? He looks away.
My dad showed up this morning and wanted to come with us.
My eyes widen. So, did you let him come?
Nope.
Peter doesn't elaborate, just nope. Hesitantly, I say, it seems like he's trying to have a relationship with you, Peter.
He had plenty of chances, and now it's too late. That ship has fucking sailed. I'm not a kid anymore.
He lifts his chin.
I'm a man, and he didn't have anything to do with it. He just wants the credit. He wants to brag to his golf buddies that his son is playing lacrosse for UVA.
I hesitate. Then I think of how his dad looked when he was watching Peter out on the lacrosse field. There was such pride in his eyes. And love.
Peter, what if you gave him a chance? Peter's shaking his head.
Lara Jean, you don't get it. And you're lucky not to get it. Your dad's freaking awesome. He'd do anything for you guys.
My dad's not like that. He's just in it for himself. If I let him back in, he'll just fuck up again. It's not worth it.
But maybe it is worth it. You never know how long you have with people. Peter flinches. I've never said something like that to him before, brought my mom up like that. But after losing Stormy, I can't help it. I have to say it because it's true and because I'll regret it if I don't. It's not about your dad. It's about you. It's about not having regrets later. Don't hurt yourself just to spite him.
I don't want to talk about him anymore. I came over here to make you feel better, not talk about my dad.
Okay, but first promise me you'll think about inviting him to graduation. He starts to speak and I interrupt him. Just think about it, that's all. It's a whole month away. You don't have to decide anything right now, so don't say yes or no. Peter sighs, and I'm sure he's going to tell me no, but instead he asks,
"How'd your speech go?"
I think it went okay. I think Stormy would have liked it. I talked about the time she got caught skinny dipping and the police came and she had to ride home in a squad car. Oh, and John made it back in time. Peter nods in a diplomatic sort of way. I told him John might be coming today, and all he said was, "Cool, cool." Because, of course, he couldn't say anything different. John was Stormy's grandson, after all.
So where is McLaren going to school?
He hasn't decided yet. It's between Maryland and William and Mary. Peter's eyebrows fly up.
Really? Well, that's awesome.
He says it in a way that makes it clear he doesn't think it's awesome at all. I give him a funny look. What?
Nothing. Did he hear that you're going there?
No, I just told him today. Not that one thing has anything to do with the other. You're being really weird right now, Peter.
Well, how would you feel if I told you Jen was going to UVA?
I don't know, not that bothered. I mean that sincerely. All of my bad feelings about Peter and Genevieve feel like such a long time ago. Peter and I have come so far since then. Besides, it's completely different. John and I never even dated. We haven't spoken in months. Also, he has a girlfriend. Also, he hasn't even decided if he's going there or not.
So where's his girlfriend going then?
Ann Arbor. He makes a dismissive sound.
That ain't gonna last.
Softly, I say, maybe people will look at you and me and think the same thing.
It's literally not the same thing at all. We're only going to be a couple of hours apart. And then you're transferring. That's 1 year tops. I'll drive down on weekends. It's literally not a big deal.
You just said literally twice, I say to make him smile. When he doesn't, I say, you'll have practice and games. You won't want to be at William and Mary every weekend. It's the first time I've had this thought. For just a moment, Peter looks stung, but then he shrugs and says,
fine, or you'll come up here. We'll get you used to the drive. It's basically all just I-64.
William and Mary doesn't let freshmen have cars. Neither does UVA. I checked. Peter brushes this off.
So I'll get my mom to drop my car off when I want to come see you. It's not like it's far. And you can take the bus. We'll make it work. I'm not worried about us.
I am, a little. But I don't say so because Peter doesn't seem to want to talk about practicalities. I guess I don't either. Scooting closer to me, he asks,
want me to stay over tonight? I can come back after my mom goes to bed. I can distract you if you get sad.
Nice try, I tell him, pinching his cheek.
Did Josh ever spend the night? With your sister, I mean?
I ponder this. Not that I know of. I mean, I really doubt it. We're talking about my sister and Josh, after all.
That's them, Peter says, dipping his head low and rubbing his cheek against mine. He loves how soft my cheeks are. He's always saying that.
We're nothing like them.
You're the one who brought them up, I start to say. But then he's kissing me, and I can't even finish a thought, much less a sentence.
Chapter 22. The morning of prom, Kitty comes in my room as I'm painting my toes. What do you think about this color with my dress? I ask her. It looks like you dipped your toenails in Pepto-Bismol. I peer down at my feet. It kind of does look like that. Maybe I should do a beige color instead. The consensus is that the dress requires an updo. To show off your collarbone, Trina says. I've never thought of my collarbone as something to be shown off. In fact, I've never thought of my collarbone at all. After lunch, Kitty goes with me to the hair salon to supervise. She tells the stylist, "Don't make it too done. Do you know what I mean?" The stylist gives me a nervous look in the mirror. "I think so. You want it to look natural." She's talking to Kitty, not me, because it's obvious who's in charge. "Like a natural chignon? But not too natural. Think Grace Kelly." Kitty pulls up a picture on her phone and shows it to her. "See, like this, but we want the bun to the side." "Just please don't use too much hairspray," I say meekly, as the stylist coils my hair into a knot at the nape of my neck and shows Kitty. "That's great," Kitty says to her. To me, she says, "Lara Jean, she has to use hairspray if you want it to stay up." Suddenly, I'm having second thoughts about an updo. "Are we sure about the updo?" "Yes," Kitty says. To the stylist, she says, "We're doing the updo." The updo is more done than I'm used to. My hair is in a side bun. The top is smooth like a ballerina. It's pretty, but when I look in the mirror, I don't recognize myself. It's an older, sophisticated version of me who's going to the opera or the symphony. After all the time the woman at the salon spent putting my hair up, I end up taking it down when I get home. Kitty yells at me as she brushes my hair out, but I bear it. Tonight, I want to feel like me. "How are we doing your grand entrance?" Kitty asks me as she sweeps the brush through my hair one last time. "Grand entrance?" I repeat. "When Peter gets here, how are you going to enter the room?" Trina, who's lying on my bed eating a popsicle, pipes up with, "When I went to prom, we did a thing where the dads walked the girls down the stairs and then somebody would announce you." I look at them both like they are nuts. "Trina, I'm not getting married. I'm going to prom." "We could turn off all the lights and put on music, and then you walk out and do a pose at the top of the stairs." "I don't want to do that," I interrupt. Her forehead creases. "What part?" "All of it." "But you need a moment where everybody looks at you and only you," Kitty says. "It's called a first look," Trina explains. "Don't worry, I'll get the whole thing on video." If we'd thought about this earlier, we could have really done it up, and maybe it would have gone viral. Kitty shakes her head at me in a disgusted way, as if this is somehow my fault. "The last thing I need is to go viral again," I tell her. Pointedly, I say, "Remember my hot tub video?" She at least looks a little abashed for a second. "Let's not linger on the past," she says, fluffing up my hair.
"Hey, birthday girl," Trina says to me. "Is the plan still to go for barbecue tomorrow night?"
"Yep," I say. With Stormy passing away and prom and the wedding and everything else, I haven't given my birthday much thought. Trina wanted to throw me a big party, but I told her I'd rather just have a family dinner out and cake and ice cream back at the house.
Trina and Kitty are baking the cake while I'm at prom, so we'll see how that goes. When Peter and his mom arrive, I'm still running around doing last-minute things.
Guys, Peter and his mom are here.
My dad calls up the stairs. Perfume! I screech to Kitty, who sprays me. Where's my clutch? Trina tosses it to me.
Did you pack a lipstick?
I open it to check. Yes. Where are my shoes?
Over here,
Kitty says, picking them up off the floor. Hurry up and get strapped in. I'll go downstairs and tell them you're coming.
I'll open up a bottle of champagne for the grown-ups, Trina says, following her out.
I don't know why I'm so nervous. It's only Peter. I guess prom really is its own kind of magic. The last thing I do is put on Stormy's ring, and I think of how she must be looking down on me right now. Happy I'm wearing her ring on prom night, in honor of her and all the dances she went to. When I come down the stairs, Peter is sitting on the couch with his mom. He's shaking his knee up and down, which is how I know he's nervous, too. As soon as he sees me, he stands up. He raises his eyebrows.
You look... wow.
For the past week, he's been asking for details on what my dress looks like, and I held him at bay for the surprise, which I'm glad I did, because it was worth it to see the look on his face.
You look wow, too.
His tux fits him so nicely. You'd think it was custom, but it's not. It's a rental from After Hours Formal Wear. I wonder if Mrs. Kavinsky made a few sly adjustments. She's a marvel with a needle and thread. I wish guys could wear tuxedos more often, though I suppose that would take some of the thrill away. Peter slides my corsage on my wrist. It is white ranunculus and baby's breath, and it's the exact corsage I would have picked for myself. I'm already thinking of how I'll hang it over my bed so it dries just so. Kitty is dressed up, too. She has on her favorite dress so she can be in the pictures. When Peter pins a daisy corsage on her, her face goes pink with pleasure, and he winks at me. We take a picture of me and her, one of me and Peter and her, and then she says in her bossy way, "Now just one of me and Peter." And I'm pushed off to the side with Trina, who laughs.
"The boys her age are in for it,"
she says to me, and Peter's mom, who's smiling too.
"Why am I not in any of these pictures?"
Daddy wonders. So, of course, we do a round with him, too, and a few with Trina and Mrs. Kavinsky. Then we take pictures outside by the dogwood tree, by Peter's car, on the front steps, until Peter says,
"Enough pictures! We're going to miss the whole thing."
When we go to his car, he opens the door for me gallantly. On the way over, he keeps looking at me. I keep my eyes trained straight ahead, but I can see him in my periphery. I've never felt so admired. This must be how Stormy felt all the time. As soon as we get to prom, I tell Peter we have to get in line to take our official prom picture with the professional photographer. He says we should just wait till the line dies down, but I insist. I want a good one for my scrapbook before my hair goes flat. We do the requisite prom pose, with Peter standing behind me, his hands on my hips. The photographer lets us take a look at our picture, and Peter insists on taking another one because he doesn't like the way his hair looks. After we take our picture, we find all our friends on the dance floor. Durrell has matched his tie to Pammy's dress, lavender. Chris is wearing a tight black bandage dress, not unlike the one Kitty picked out for me to wear when she and Margot and I went shopping. Lucas looks like an English dandy in his suit, which is tailored to his body just beautifully. I finally convince the two of them to come by suggesting they just stop by. Chris said she was still going clubbing with her work friends, but from the looks of it, she isn't going anywhere anytime soon. She's getting so much attention in her bandage dress. Style comes on, and we all go crazy, screaming in each other's faces and jumping up and down. Peter goes craziest of all. He keeps asking me if I'm having fun. He only asks out loud once, but with his eyes he asks me again and again. They are bright and hopeful, alight with expectation. With my eyes, I tell him, yes, 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 I'm having fun. We're starting to get the hang of slow dancing, too. Maybe we should take a ballroom dancing class when I get to UVA, so we can actually get good at it. I tell him this, and fondly he says, you always want to take things to the next level. Next level chocolate chip cookies. I gave up on those. Next level Halloween costumes. I like for things to feel special. At this, Peter smiles down at me and I say, it's just too bad we'll never dance cheek to cheek.
Maybe we could order you some dancing stilts.
Oh, you mean high heels? He snickers.
I don't think there's such a thing as 10-inch heels.
I ignore him. And it's too bad your noodle arms aren't strong enough to pick me up. Peter lets out a roar like an injured lion and swoops me up and swings me around, just like I knew he would. It's a rare thing to know someone so well, whether they'll pivot left or right. Outside of my family, I think he might be the person I know best of all. Of course, Peter wins prom king. Prom queen is Ashanti Dixon. I'm just relieved it isn't Genevieve up there, slow dancing with him, with a tiara on her head. Ashanti is nearly Peter's height, so the two of them actually can dance cheek to cheek, though they don't. Peter looks out at me and winks. I'm standing off to the side with Marshawn Hopkins, Ashanti's date. He leans over to me and says, when they come back, we should ignore them and just dance away. Which makes me laugh. I'm proud of Peter out there, at how he dances so tall with his back so straight. At a pivotal moment in the song, Peter dips Ashanti and everyone hoots and hollers and stomps their feet. And I'm proud of that, too. People are so sincere in their affection for him. They can all celebrate Peter because he's nice and he makes everyone feel good. He just gives the night a little extra shine. And they're glad for it, and so am I. I'm happy he gets this send-off. One last dance. We're both quiet. It's not over yet. We still have the whole summer ahead. But high school, the two of us here together, Laura Jean and Peter as we are today, that part is done. We'll never be here exactly like this again. I'm wondering if he's feeling sad, too, and then he whispers, check out Gabe over there trying to casually rest his hand on Keisha's butt. He turns me slightly so I can see. Gabe's hand is indeed hovering at Keisha Wood's lower back/butt area, like an indecisive butterfly looking for a landing spot. I giggle. This is why I like Peter so much. He sees things I don't see.
I know what our song should be, he says.
What? And then, like magic, Al Green's voice fills the hotel ballroom. Let's stay together. You made them play this, I accuse. I'm tearing up a little bit. He grins.
It's fate. Whatever you want to do is all right with me.
Peter takes my hand and puts it on his heart.
Let's stay together,
he sings. His voice is clear and true. Everything I love about him. On the way to after prom, Peter says he's hungry, and can we stop at the diner first? I think there's going to be pizza at after prom, I say. Why don't we just eat there?
But I want pancakes,
he whines. We pull into the diner parking lot, and after we park, he gets out of the car